All music used on the Black Cat Lounge is done so with the grateful permission of the artist.
Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine. Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Without no seams, no needle work, then she'll be a true love of mine. Find me an acre of land, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Between the salt water and the sea strand, the lamb's horn, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme, and sow it all o'er with one peppercorn. Then she'll be a true lover. Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme, and thrash it all out with a bunch of heather. Then she'll be a true lover. Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of
Conversations, guests, psychic readings. Welcome to the Black Cat Lounge.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to the coolest place in town, the Black Cat Lounge. And of course, I am your sometimes travel weary, but most congenial host, the Reverend Tim Shaw. I'm still a bit travel weary because this past weekend, actually, I was a featured speaker at the Michigan Paracon in the beautiful Sault Ste. Marie area. It was great. It was held at the Kedan Casino, and you know, let's face it, I walked in, put $30 in a slot machine called Freak Show, how aptly named, walked away with $154, and that took care of my bar tab. I won't lie about that. And then, of course, later on, I put all the money back in because I could. But it was just a great place. But I want to share with everybody and all my Michigan friends what a beautiful, beautiful area is. It's historically rich. And the people are, you know what, the people are just so wonderful. I've been all over the place, all over the East I've spoken in. And Michigan, I don't know what it is. For some reason, they're just wonderful, wonderful people. And I got to tell you, I was treated like family up by the members of the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society. And they are the ones who put on the event. And I was invited to one of the members' homes. We had a barbecue there on Thursday evening. And I'm going to tell you something that it was crazy, people. It was totally crazy. I mean, this event was so busy. I'm talking 8:30 on Friday morning. People came flying in through the doors. It shut down at 7 p.m. on Saturday. It was just a constant stream of enthusiasts who came to hear, like, all the different celebrities speak. And I got a chance to actually sit down and hang out with John Tenney and my buddy Dustin Perry. I got a chance to meet Nick Groff, who we're working on right now to bring on the show. Really great person, fantastic person. My good friend Rosemary Ellen Guiley was there, and I mean, she's just a lovely, lovely person. And I can't even remember everybody that was there. Now my brain just shut off. The Bigfoot guy, Meldrum, was there. He sat right next to me. He was great. So it was just such a great mix of people. And I got to tell you what, I was humbled because I did two gallery readings, and you know what? The two gallery readings were totally sold out on by 10 a.m. on Friday morning, and that to me is just phenomenal. So I just got a chance, just to let everybody know, I got a chance to speak to several hundred of my closest, newest friends this weekend. What a great time! And a special thanks is going out to Tim Ellis and Brad Blair of the Para-X Show, Creaking Door, and Steve LaPlante. All three of them who were spearheading the organization of the Paracon itself. So it was great. And you know what? You guys know how much I like to do charities and how much I like to support charities. Well, my friend Tammy Fife has asked me to mention that on eBay, they are auctioning off a K2 meter that was signed by many of the celebrities who have appeared at different cons over the years. And all the proceeds are going to Paranormal Kicks Cancer. The meter was signed by people like Grant Wilson and Dave Tango, Paul Bradford and Brian Cano. I mean, all the cash is going that I know. I believe it's going to BASE, which is a camp in Florida. And it really is so important that these kids who are facing such terrible, terrible treatments and have all these maladies, they have a chance to for a few days to live like normal kids. So, you know, please check it out. And as I always say in these auctions, bid once and bid high for a great, great cause. And of course, if you guys want to know more about what's going on here in the world of the lounge, head on over to www.theblackcatlounge.net. You can listen to our show, see what we've been up to, hanging out with. You can watch videos, and I'll be updating this week just to include the new incarnation of t-shirts that Eric Charles designed. And it's a really sort of cool design. It has a talking board on it, has the devil on it. It's from an old station. It's from some old advertising stationery. So look for that. Also, I'll be adding, I think I put on there, if I'm not mistaken, at the Voodoo, Hoodoo, and Conjuring event I did up near Guelph, Canada last month. I believe those are up there, and I'm going to be updating all my photographs and everything. So it's really great. Finally, I just want to keep you guys up to speed. The Curiosity series that I'm working on is chugging along very, very smoothly. We have a deal with the local cable network to show it on one of their cable access channels, which is really cool. But you can also see it live through one of their thingies, whatever they call them. You can tell I'm not of that dagnab computer generation. But you can also see them. We'll have them on YouTube, and we may end up putting them on DVDs. We don't know yet. But we're just out having a really great time. And the first episode is finished, it's polished, it's ready to be launched in September. So look for that, and I'll let you know. Now tonight, my friends, now tonight, kiddies, we have a guy whom I've wanted to meet for really, I'll be honest with you, quite a long time. Everyone I talk to has said wonderful things about him. And that is so refreshing, because so many people in this field can be really nasty, they can be backstabbing, and you guys all know. You know all the paradrama, you know how much I like the paradrama, you know what I tell people with the paradrama. But this guy's a little bit different. Here on the Niagara Frontier, I try to keep my, you know, my ears to the ground, and of course, without getting shot in the butt, of course, so to speak. But I gotta tell you all, this guy is rapidly making a name for himself in the paranormal and metaphysical communities, which is great. Mike discovered his mediumship abilities when investigating paranormal phenomena, as well as his ever-evolving spirituality. I had a chance just to message back and forth with Mike, and I really was impressed by that spirituality. So many people in the field, as you know, and I harp, and I have at my church services or whatever, you know, get your head out of your posterior. Understand that what we're doing in its basis is spiritual. And understand that those that we contact, those that we record, those that we experience, were people at one time. And these are souls right now. And what I really like about this guy is he mixes ability with scientific method, which is, again, what we all should be doing. Personally, I've had enough of the stomach growls and the farts and whatever. The people swear they're disembodied spirits. So aim higher, my friends, just like this guy does. Mike holds a BA in psychology, a master's, and a doctorate in education, my friends. He is also a member of the American Dowser Society, which I think is so cool, and the American Tarot Society. This guy is a teacher, spiritual worker, and is better looking than Bill Nye the Science Guy, and has a hairline that rivals mine. Please welcome to the Black Cat Lounge, my friends, Dr. Mike Berta. Welcome to the lounge, Mike. It's been way too long in this meeting becoming a reality.
Absolutely has, Tim. Thanks for having me on. It's great.
Oh, I cannot believe finally we're sitting down. Well, sort of cyberly in the bar, and of course you are in you're sitting upon the fake zebra skin stool of love that only special guests get a chance to sit on. So, you know, just
I wondered if this was zebra or not.
Well, you know, listen, it's a little fake and it's a little coarse, but if you were sitting there, you know, in shorts, you'd get a rash. But since you're wearing long pants, we're all good. Anyway, hey Mike, I know a little bit about you, and I know a little bit about your background, but you're new to the show. And the one thing that everybody likes about what I do and when I interview people is I am so interested in backstory. So I'd like to give my listeners a little background on, well, the people that they're listening to. So if you would, please, would you talk a little bit about the crossover from a person who was, well, maybe scientifically orientated as a paranormal investigator to a spiritual worker? I mean, what was that pinnacle moment, that aha moment, that convinced you to follow a more metaphysical path?
It's actually a great story and a great question, Tim. I've been investigating the paranormal for a whole bunch of years, and I had always different kinds of experiences. I'd walk into a place and be overcome with emotion and you know, write it off as just a kind of a personal experience. And it wasn't until probably last summer, that I was investigating a local place here in Buffalo and using some dowsing rods. The night was a really active night and using dowsing rods, but something just didn't seem right about the responses that were coming from the spirit or the entity, whatever it was. And then all of a sudden, the dowsing rods stopped really working the way that I wanted them to work. They were spinning. They were doing all kinds of crazy things. And that was when I had another kind of one of those personal experiences where I felt like something was reaching around me, grabbing me, pushing right up into my mouth, my face, and pushing me back. That was the end of that for the night. You know, you got to know when your number's up for the evening and time to go home. When I went back to that location to figure out what was going on and dig in, because I'm not one to retreat from things like that either, what I found is dowsing just wasn't working. And I just started to ask a lot of people and reflect about how that worked. And what I realized is that that the spiritual world was telling me I don't need the physical tools, the demonstrable tools in order to be investigating the paranormal. And it started everything from that was like a light switch. Everything started to click. All those experiences, walking in, having those powerful empathic moments where you're either powerfully sad or powerfully happy for no apparent reason because the lights are off and you didn't know what that room was used for anyway, and why I would be led to certain places in an investigation, or why I would say, let's not ask about this, let's ask about this instead. And I started to realize that there, you know, we all have psychic medium ability as a matter of how we develop it and where we start to use it. But in the paranormal field, I started to realize exactly what it was, what I'd been telling clients all along, which is your number one tool is yourself. Pay attention to how you feel, what you think, what you see, what you smell, what you're experiencing. Know that's your number one tool. And I'd really, I don't want to say I've been ignoring it for the sake of a K2 meter or a Mel meter or a radio recorder. I was just not paying too close attention. And so that was the trigger moment for me to start looking at what more is out there in terms of paranormal investigation, and started getting the development and started to realize, you know, all for my whole life, what I've been really experiencing and not really acknowledging. I think that's pretty normal for a lot of men who are in the paranormal that have a lot of, you know, psychic medium ability. That, you know, the paranormal is a kind of a big scary thing, so we can, you know, we can use our kind of our fight reflex in there a little bit, and it's a little bit on the darker side of spiritual. But what I came to realize is that, you know, I also needed to. Why I always thought I had a need to help people. You know, people are afraid. They don't know what's going on. They're confused and they think they're crazy. And so there's a lot of things out there that you can help them understand so they can feel a little bit more at ease. They can help themselves. They can heal themselves, heal their environment, and, you know, let the spirit go on to be, go on to what they need to go on to. Just like you said earlier, it's, you know, spirits were and are people. They just need to be respected and not, you know, tinkered with.
Exactly. And you know what I always tell my students is that the only difference between those of us who acknowledge the ability and use the ability and everybody else is that we listen a little bit closer. That's all. Mm-hmm. We're a little bit more observant. That's it. There's nothing more, because everybody is getting bombarded by the same stuff that we are, and we just happen to, you know, listen. And I think that what you've said is phenomenal, because I really do believe that you developed in the correct manner. You were able to open up, and that's what, you know, when we're dealing with clients, we're dealing with whomever, we want them to understand, we want to educate them, and we want them to understand that they are the first tool in their toolbox that they're going to go and they're going to use. Now, this is sort of a controversial question within the communities themselves. And I'm throwing it at you. You know why? Because I know you can handle this question without, like, silently giving me the finger where I can't see you. But anyway, the rule of skeptics. The role of skeptics. For me, I actually love them because they keep people honest. They really, truly do. They have forced myself to keep on that proper path, to keep myself as honest as possible, to work. And, you know, I mean, this is what I love. And this is something that, and again, I've seen a lot of, I grew up in the age of fraud, the final years of the fraud. And for you, why do you feel the role of a skeptic is important. And can a person be both a believer as well as a skeptic?
You know, I was just thinking about this today. Like, what is the role of a skeptic? And when does a skeptic become a charlatan in their own right? But I think the role of a skeptic is really important to an investigation. I think it helps us be more dogged about the information that we're getting. And, you know, you mentioned earlier how I'll use the scientific equipment and the meters and the recorders as well as my psychic medium abilities, because I need to bridge that gap between people who aren't having the same conversations I'm having in a haunting situation with what they can experience. That's all that equipment really does, is it just bridges the physical manifestation of the invisible. But, you know, the role of a skeptic does, it helps us be more honest. It helps us, you know, make sure that we're carrying this out to the end result, to get final proof for somebody. I don't think we have a lot of information in the field. We're all believers. We have information that in data and evidence that all says the paranormal is real, and that's what's here. You know, I think I forget who it was. Oh, it was I was watching a show with Chip Coffey where he said, you know, the paranormal is nothing more than something we haven't explained yet.
Exactly.
I think that's exactly what we're working on. The role of the skeptic is to kind of push us to trying to explain the things that we hear. You know, go back, do the research, do the historical background research on a location to find out if it's, you know, what information you're getting, how is it valid, taking a look at recorded information. If you're catching EVPs, but your psychic medium on your team is saying, this is what I'm experiencing. I think it's all about just, for me, it's about documenting, keeping track of all those things and not really letting go until the skeptic has, you know, you know, we kind of reach that point where we have a general agreement that what we're experiencing is real. I think we can all be believers and skeptics. I'm a skeptic. I watch the occasional ghost show, or I hear people, or people come to me with cases or experiences they're having, and my skeptic brain turns on right away. I would rather explain things as normal than paranormal. Normal is easy to fix.
Exactly. You better believe it.
You know, your doors are opening because they're not level. That's the skeptic in me to help you make a really quick, easy fix, as opposed to having to go in and spiritually cleanse your, you know, where you live. That's a little bit more of a difficult experience. You know, and I think, but I do also think that skeptics can push themselves to the point of just the ludicrous, to say, well, you know, a pig 3 miles down the road could have been eating cabbage that day, and that's what that phantom smell is. I think, right. I think skeptics can push themselves to those extreme limits of being a kind of a charlatan in their own right.
Well, it's true, because I believe, now I'm a big fan of Joe Nichols, and I know everybody out there who knows, who's in the paranormal field and knows Joe Nichols is cringing right now, but Joe Nichols is somebody that, when you talk to him, he's sort of like, yeah, he's a big skeptic, but he wants the truth. And I think the bottom line is that, isn't it true that that's what we want? We want to look for the truth. We want to see what the truth is. And sometimes the truth is unpalatable to true believers. And that's where I have a problem. That's where I separate from a lot of my spiritualist friends and stuff. And because I just don't believe everything is paranormal. I just don't believe everything is supernatural. I want to know. I mean, otherwise we'd be back in the Middle Ages venerating chicken blood that supposedly boils twice a year in some church or something. Do you know what I mean, with these holy relics?
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, that's the thing. You know, that part of my kind of academic training is very much that. Sometimes you ask a question of the paranormal, and you know, the answer might come back no. It might come back that it's not true, or you might think that there's something that you think that this has happened, but it didn't happen, and it's not true, and this is the quote-unquote normal explanation or the kind of non-paranormal explanation, and that has to be okay for us, too. We have to be able to say that, you know, if we want people to believe that there's a paranormal world out there, an unseen world, a spirit world, then we also have to accept that in some cases it's just not going to be the same thing. It's not going to be real.
Exactly. Hey, and everybody, you're listening to the Black Cat Lounge here on the Parax Radio Network. And our guest tonight is the fantabulous, the illuminating Dr. Mike Berta, who is a sensitive and a paranormal investigator here in the Niagara Frontier. And you brought some fans with you, because I have a question that just was Skyped to me. And let me just read it here. He would actually like to know, Mike, what do you feel a spirit personality actually is? And also, is a spirit the same as the soul of a departed man? That's a good question. That's a great question, man.
That's a great question.
I'd be sitting there going, you know what? This is one of those shows. I'm kind of glad I'm just throwing them out to you. I'm going to throw them out to you. You can field them.
I think spirits have their own personality, right? We all have our own personality. We're tricksters. We're melancholy. I think sometimes I've encountered, you know, routine kind of the normal haunts that kind of reside in the building, and they've had different personalities each time I've met them. Sometimes playful, sometimes grouchy. I mean, I think that that's just further evidence that that's the that they are real. They are or were real, quote unquote, real people that have, you know, just passed on to the other side. You know, the whole kind of is a spirit a soul thing. You know, that's the kind of the same question as a spirit a ghost thing. And I think at this point, because, you know, our language is a fluid language that's always growing, I think we use those things interchangeably. I think souls are a little bit, I mean, for me personally, I think souls are a little bit different than a lot of what we experience in the paranormal, right? I think souls to some degree belong to heaven. They cross through if they're trapped. And I think that the soul kind of informs the haunting, informs the ghostly activity. But I think, you know, that's kind of where I feel like the soul is the energy. So maybe this is the same, but I think in the paranormal field, we use the language probably a little bit too loosely, but very fluid and interchangeably: souls, spirits, ghosts, entities, the deceased, the departed.
It's all a question of semantics. That's all I got to say. At the end of the day, we can put a label on everything, and it's just a question of semantics, and it's all the same no matter what. Building on that question, Mike. Building on that question. See, this is how quick I am some days. Not often, but I am. You know, I want to pick your brain for just a couple seconds. Now, you know what? This is something that I get asked a lot when I do readings or consultations. Just why do you think a person whom has passed does not make itself known to a loved one or touch in during mediumistic readings within a timely basis? I'm interested in what's your take on that?
Well, actually, I have a personal story about that. My stepfather passed away a number of years ago. My goodness, now it's got to be almost 10 years ago now, or a little bit more perhaps. And boy, I'll tell you, I really wanted to, you know, I didn't get to see him for the last probably year or so of his life. And he was over the road trucker. And I was really hurting when he passed on. And I was doing paranormal work and always wanting to, you know, have an experience that confirmed for me that he was still there, confirmed for me that he was around, even taking care of the funeral arrangements and my mom and the family and helping out with those things and going on about conversations and running into metaphysical folks who were having communications with him, or at least, you know, reporting to me that they were. You know, it wasn't until probably, I don't even know, maybe 7 or 8 months after he passed that he came to me, just gave me the message that said, "I'm sorry I haven't been around in a while. I've been kind of busy." And, you know, I wonder if that's so, I mean, not having passed over to the other side, I wonder if that isn't the case, that, you know, they pass over into a new world and, you know, there's people waiting for them.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that maybe it's a time for them to catch up, to transition, to learn new skills. I mean, I think that that's to some degree they learn new skills. And I've channeled, have the conversations with people who seem to have their own kind of spirit guide on the other side, almost to say, you know, their ability isn't as strong right now. I'm going to translate for them to you so that you can give this message to another person. And so I've had those experiences, and I wonder if it's just one, they don't know exactly how to use their ability quite yet, especially if it's a sudden passing or an unexpected passing or a short-term path, like they didn't suffer for a very long time, or if it's just that they have they've just got a party to go to. There's family members and friends that they haven't seen, and you know, maybe there's, who knows, maybe there's an orientation they have to attend, sign some paperwork for this human resource file. But you know, but I've also channeled people who were, you know, who were dying, you know, and still in the physical world and making that pass to the spiritual world. And when they passed, it was, you know, there was an instantaneous ability to talk with them and work with them. So I think what it really comes down to is, you know, what kind of business do they have to take care of on the other side? Do they need to learn their ability? Do they got to hang out with their family and friends? Or do they still feel a strong connection here to this side that they feel like they're support and love and respect, and they're still needed here to help with that transition into the spiritual world?
You know, oftentimes I get the message when somebody asks me that question, and it kind of tunes in, and I get the essence of this, of what they're trying to say is, hey, listen, I'm still there, I'm still looking in, but I've got something more important that I've got to focus, you know, focus on. And I'll tell you what, 9 out of 10 times when I question a client, I usually say, hey, listen, is there an abuse or an addiction problem within your immediate family? And they say, yes. I say, you know, is there like somebody that's really suffering from an illness? They'll say, yeah. So a lot of times,
that's what they're dealing with, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. They're trying to ease that. They're trying to help there. And, you know, we can't be greedy. We can't monopolize their time because, you know, they'll get tired of it too, and they'll just kind of wander away and say, hey, you know, I'll see you, you know, in like 10 years. Not that, Mike, you're going anywhere in like 10 years.
I don't know.
You know that. But, you know, you know we're sensitive here. No, we're not going there, baby. We're not going there, you know. I need you around here.
Yeah, I think that that's exactly right. I mean, to some degree, it's that you don't, you know, a lot of the messages come through for me of, you don't need me right now. You know, you're okay, or this is a time for me to walk behind you and not, you know, this is a time for you to kind of step out on your own, to not be living with the ghost of me, the kind of that, you know, that saying of we're always living with their ghost, you know, sometimes it's a time for them to go on and be without them for a while. And, you know, I've had that happen, and I've also had it happen where spirit's on the other side saying, I'm really frustrated they don't hear me. So, you know, I've been trying to get a hold of them because they have problems and they're not hearing me. But yeah, I think you're right. They have a lot of work to do.
Exactly. Now, I've got a hot potato question for you that just came in the chat room. So once again, Mike, I'm sorry. I'm throwing it at you. And as someone who's an instructor, and you're an instructor yourself in metaphysics and paranormal, this is a good one. And this is one that I get sometimes. Would you ask Dr. Berta if he feels that everyone should develop psychic ability or are actually fit to use it properly? Yeah, I'm glad you're answering this question. So what's your opinion on that one?
You know, I think, Tim, and to the person who asked that question, I think everybody has a psychic ability. We've all had those experiences where you're thinking about a friend that you haven't talked to in 2 or 3 years, and then, you know, an hour and a half later, they've sent you an email, or they're on the phone, or you run into them at the grocery store. You know, we've all had these kind of psychic experiences, like when, you know, a loved one passes and you just had an instant knowledge of that passing and called to find out if everything was okay. So I think we all have the psychic ability. I think we all have the ability to develop it. It's really a question of, are you developing it in a way that's kind of, that's ethical, that's making sure that you are doing it in a way that's healing oriented. I think there's a lot of people out there who can give you information that might not be in a way that's for the greater good, for your good, for the good of the spirit, for the good of the message, or for just the good of the universe. And I think we really do all have the ability. I think we all have the ability to develop it. It's a matter of finding the right place to do that, or the right group of people to do that with. It's about finding it's kind of about finding your own groove. You know, I've got friends who are, you know, kind of the angels of death, right? They know as soon as they meet somebody when their time of death is going to be. And that is a powerful ability that I am fortunate to not have. But, you know, they have to learn to use that ability carefully and in the right way, so that it's not damaging to people, because People put a lot of faith in spiritual messages in the spiritual world, and it's our responsibility to be looking for the greater good, for the good message, for the healing message. And that's the work. That's the kind of philosophy I apply to the paranormal. It's a philosophy I apply to the spiritual. So yeah, everybody has the ability. I think anybody can develop it. It's just a matter of, I think you said earlier, it's just, you know, I hear things more than other people hear things. It's just, I put my antenna up. That's all.
What I like about what you've just said is it's taking responsibility for the pablum and diarrhea that comes out of your mouth when you're doing readings, when you're helping, you know, clients, when you're counseling them. My biggest fear has always been I refuse to create a self-fulfilling prophecy. And, you know, I mean, it's one thing giving out warnings. It's one thing saying, hey, you know what? Listen, I don't prescribe. I don't diagnose. I mean, I can't do it under New York State law. However, listen, do yourself a favor. When the doctor gives you a sheet and there's check marks on it, follow the check marks, okay? You don't want to ever create a self-fulfilling prophecy by saying, well, you know what? There's something coming up that, you know, I'm not feeling this, or, you know, you're not going to feel good. You've got to be very, very careful with that, because people, you're right, people put so much stock into what we do. Hey, I've got another pretty good question from the chat room. I should have warned you that some of my listeners are kind of wild, and they have they're trying, and you're doing well. You're doing a lot better than I would have done. I would have been going, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do this anymore. I guess I got to go home. Bye. Here's a good one. Does Dr. Berta feel that anywhere man has walked, he has left a bit of himself? And thus, there is a possibility that location could become, quote-unquote, haunted or paranormally active, opposed to, let's say, places of high emotion. That's a good one.
That is a good one. You know, I don't, you know, the high emotion thing, we all know that's, you know, that's pretty widely accepted. If there have been in places that's either extremely happy or extremely sad, that there's more likely to be a paranormal activity. And I think that spirit and ghosts can go where it is they please to go, and probably a lot easier than us. There's probably no frequent flyer miles necessary for that type of activity. But I think that they have the ability to go where it is they want to go. And I think, you know, I just had a situation happen to me last night where I was standing out watching the meteor shower, and somebody just walked right up to me and just looked at me and kept moving on. And it was a fairly serene, peaceful place. There's not a lot of houses. There's not a lot of buildings. It's away from the city lights. And so, yeah, maybe it was just a place that they walked when they were needing solace, or they were just needing a little bit of quiet and peace in their life. So not necessarily emotionally charged, perhaps, but just a place they like to be. So maybe the answer is, yeah, they can be where it is they want to be.
We're gonna just kind of change gears a little bit, and we're gonna talk about something a little bit negative or a little bit heavy. As you know, as a lot of people out there know, I've kind of stepped away from much of the negative casework that I've done. Really, I mean, last year from September through November, I mean, I received 16 requests to work on negative cases. I consult on them now, but I don't actively pursue them unless, you know, I have other friends that are in the field that they'll send their teams out. And if it so merits, I mean, then I'll join in. But out of those 16 cases, one actually was something that, I mean, we're not talking demon or anything like that, but we're talking something nasty. Now, what I want to know is, do you feel that that people psychically, spiritually, even physically can be worn down, can be somewhat damaged by this negative work? Like if you know, and just, I'm just going to reference for everybody one of my favorite, it's kind of hard to read, but one of my favorite works is by Malachi Martin, The Jesuit Exorcist, Hostage to the Devil. And I mean, he really talks about how the exorcist actually, it takes a toll on their lives and it shortens their lives. Do you feel that something negative, exposure to such negativity, can in fact go and really get right into your DNA and damage you somehow?
Yeah, I absolutely do. I mean, look, this work is about an energy exchange. You know, when we're working with a real person in the real world and we're reading them mediumistically or psychically, we're absorbing their energy and we're giving them a piece of ourselves, a piece of our energy. It's an energy exchange. And I don't think that's any different than working on a negative case or just a general kind of haunting case that people have concern about. You're in there exchanging energy between you and whatever is in there. And I think that it's a negative thing. It's, you're working with something that's really powerfully negative. You know, maybe it's a demon, maybe it's not a demon, maybe it's just an inhuman or a formerly human kind of soul or spirit that's passed, that's just wreaking havoc. And yeah, I absolutely think that over time, working on negative cases like that, it's an energy exchange. And I think that if you absorb too much without learning to heal yourself and let it go, or knowing where your limits are, just like you said, you know, I backed away from that because you learned where your limit was and what you can absorb and let go, then you put yourself at risk. This is, you know, it can be a pretty risky job.
Okay, let's just capitalize on this game here.
Sure.
What's the worst case? And you don't have to, you know, don't name names, but what was one of the worst cases that you've ever worked on?
Yeah, you know, I didn't, and I'll tell you that this was the worst case that I worked on, but I didn't work on it in a physical context because it was, the person just need, there's something that she needs to do that I can't help her with, but I can see what was going on. But this, I was remote viewing the location, very clearly saw the entire situation, the physical attacks on the residents of the home. I saw exactly where this person hung out. I knew exactly the limits of his power. And I've kind of followed him around the house to see where he was going. And he turns around and looked at me. And that was the end of that. I mean, he looked at me and he knew exactly what I was up to. He sent me a message loud and clear that I was not welcome. And that was that's a pretty dangerous case. There's a lot of, you know, you mentioned your conference up in Guelph last month, and that's, you know, that's what came out of it. I don't want to give too much up because, you know, it's still an active case.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, and then, you know, I've also had, you know, incidents here and even in my home, you know, being a paranormal investigator, you know, you're a little bit more in tune with what's going on. And there's a little entity that for a long while we thought was my daughter's imaginary friend, but I'm smart enough to know when that's not really an imaginary friend. And so we kind of got rid of a couple of resident spirits here in the house because they weren't playing nicely with her. And that was when I started to learn the lesson of no one lives in my house but me.
Amen, brother. Family. Amen. I don't. Yeah. The only time I read my house is if I'm doing a radio show.
Yeah,
I don't.
Yeah,
I don't want to know anything else, man. I don't want you walking around showing yourself. You can be here if I don't know you're here and you're acting nice. But otherwise, you can stay, but not here. Pack your little ghostly bags and roll, baby. You know, that's the way it's where I feel.
They take advantage of things. I mean, for my little girl, you know, this one small, you know, what appeared to her as a child entity, and I had paranormal investigation teams come in because, you know, part of it is that skeptic, that wanting to prove wanting to have validation of what I was experiencing and what I was gathering, had people come in and help me understand and validate that. And, you know, it's hard to do that when you're so close to the case. And so, you know, and we figured out who she was and what she was doing and filling my daughter's head with all kinds of crazy notions and all kinds of terrible things. And we kind of banished her to the outside. And it wasn't actually too long ago now, probably about 6 or 7 months ago. And I was going into grave detail about the case. And I think I called that little entity forward. And when I came home that night, she was sitting in the hallway, just not my daughter, the entity was sitting in the hallway waiting for me. And she let me know. And it was pretty frightening, to be completely honest. I mean, that was a little bit of a kind of a gotta go change my pants moment. And she
I know that moment.
She sent me that message of, you can't get rid of me that easily. And that's those are pretty scary things to be in a case where, you know, you're up against an entity that's either just being a bully and they're a lot smaller than they seem to be, or they're very, very powerful entity. And you have to suss that out, figure out what it is. But yeah, you have to also know, just like you said, you consult with teams that come up against these things, and you know, and that's, you know, it's about knowing your limits and knowing who, networking, knowing who you can call on to help people, because there are just things I don't know. There's a I don't know more things than I know.
Exactly. And you have to know your, and again, we started talking about limitations. And the problem that I see with a lot of paranormal groups is the fact is that they become territorial and they don't hand off. And you know what? Every group is not made for every type of investigation. And I've been blessed because I get a chance to roll with some really great people. I mean, I've gotten a chance to really know some survivors out there. And, you know, I mean, I got Johnny Zaffis on speed dial whenever I roll into something that I don't understand. Or Native American shaman or and medicine men or whatever it takes. And a lot of people are, whether it's ego or whatever, they don't want to give the case up, but yet you're not helping the client and you're not helping yourself, because like you said, you know, these things can either become attachments or they can follow you home for a while and make your life miserable. And people don't understand that, unfortunately, and I wish they did. Wish they did. Hey, I got another chat room question, because why? We have the amazing, the effervescent, iridescent Mike Berta on the show tonight. And he is probably one of the greatest guests I've had in a long time, because, man, this guy can talk. And anything I throw at him, he is making sense with what's coming back. So, anyway, here's another chat room question. Okay, I'm going to have to paraphrase this. Now, everybody out there knows, as a spiritualist, I'm not a big angel or demon guy, but it basically is semantics. When I sat down with an exorcist, I mean, we kind of ironed that out, and I just have different names for whatever they are. What our listener wants to know is, what is your opinion, Mike, of true angels and true demons? That's kind of tricky, because I think that kind of rolls with your belief system, doesn't it?
I think so. I think so as well. I have in the past channeled an angel, and it's clear as day to me what it is, right? It's the image of it is very clear. The messaging is very crystal clear, and that's, you know, but it's rare. It's a rare occasion.
I agree to
do something like that, and I think that's the other side. I think that the reverse of the coin, the demon side of it, is equally as rare. I think, unfortunately, a lot of people go into, you know, they're watching TV, they're seeing a lot of negative cases and darker context of the paranormal, and they immediately jump to issues of demonology, and it's a demon, and it's the devil himself in your home, and, you know, they're matrixing, or they want to have that really life-threatening, terrifying experience, and I think we make more of it than is necessary. I think demons are a very rare occasion. I certainly think non-human negative entities are around, and they do kind of crazy things to people, and a lot of bad things as well. But demons are rare, and I think angels are as well. It's nice to know that they're there, but to bring one through in a message, if I'm channeling for somebody or giving them a reading, it's pretty rare. It's, you know, and maybe that's just the system that I use. It's maybe my personal belief structure. I don't know.
Maybe if you had chili for lunch, you could go and bring more angels in. That might be the way it is.
I did actually have chili for
lunch. I know. See, I'm a psychic. This is the way it works. Anyway, that's good, Mike. That was funny. But you know what? I had a case once where a woman, they fear comes into these factors. Fear is probably the biggest derailer out there. And I had a woman that she didn't want this ritual or whatever they did in her house. But yet, I guess a friend wanted to do it. So they got, it's that thing where you'd get, you get seven people together, you have seven, like, problems or questions you want angels to work on, and you invoke or call seven angels in. But after this whole thing was done, there was all this stuff that was going on in the house, and it wasn't angelic. I mean, it really wasn't. You know, there was a, you know, somebody was messing with her underwear drawer, and there's no way, you know, I mean, you know, the other people in the house would not do something like that. And there was a couple other things that were very nice. And when I sat down with her, I said, listen, I said, I got to ask you something. Were you afraid to have this happen in your house? And she said, yes. Well, fear brings in, as you well know, Mike, fear will bring in parasitical spirits. Fear will bring in lower spirits. All that stuff is, you know, like attracts like. That vibratory thing comes in, it's like open the door. But the other thing is when you're calling in angels, are they really angels? You have to figure it out, and you have to ask. And too many people take that stuff as you know, as gospel. And you have to be careful. You have to be so careful. You know, people don't realize
that's
that.
That's the teenage story of the Ouija board, right? I mean, how do you know that that's, how do you know that's what you brought through was your great uncle who, that happened to know your mother's name? You don't know that. Spirits know a lot of things.
And as a matter of fact, I have Rosalind Bone came to the house one day from Ghost Hunters Academy, and she's actually, we have a bed here in the studio, and she slept here, and she goes, "I really slept really well here, and it's the first time I ever slept with a place that had a Ouija board on the wall." I said, "You don't know what's underneath the bed, man." And I've got like 5 Ouija boards, packed away in a trunk right now, right next to the bed. So you never know what's going to happen. You got to watch that. Ouija boards are a lot of fun.
They certainly are.
I just had Merch, Bob Merch and Brandon Hodges on. As a matter of fact, I replayed the show before this one. And people don't get it. People, you are what you attract,
That's right. Yeah. And it's, Ouija boards are divination, just like dowsing rods or pendulums or table tipping or glass swirling or whatever divination type of tool you want to use. But it is about what you're calling forward, either consciously or unconsciously, and what might step forward anyway. If you're one of 7 people, it might not be you. It might be one of them.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's something where, when we start working seance, you got to have the same people, you got to have the same mindset, working on the same questions, everybody's got to be on the same page. And you have to try to sink in your energies in order for anything to work, and to do it safely. And unfortunately, too many people just don't get that. Hey, we are rapidly, rapidly, rapidly running out of time. And, this is great, Mike. I thank you so much for jumping in. I've got another question that came in from the chat room, and you got a couple minutes, you can answer it.
Yeah.
As an educator, what do you see as some of the pitfalls in those who are working within the modern paranormal field?
Well, I think I started off like a lot of people did, as a hobbyist, and wanting to have an experience, and watching it on TV and wanting to do those things. I mean, I've had paranormal experiences my whole life, and I wanted to get access to understand that. But I think as an educator, where I take people and where I go myself is that constant craving for wanting to know more, that drive to prove, or the drive to get more evidence and understand the world around you, to learn protection and cleansing, to learn different types of things. I think a lot of hobbyists stop short of that. They stop short of, well, I know how to get evidence, and I can give that evidence to a homeowner or to a business owner, and that's what I can do. I think that's where they stop. And where the teams need to start moving towards is learning how to counsel with people. I mean, the actual social, psychological skill of counseling with somebody, and the teaching skill of being able to teach a family how to perform a saging, if that's what the entity, if that's what the cleansing calls for, or teach them a little bit about where they can go to learn something that's facing them. I mean, just because you believe it to be a Native American spirit doesn't mean that Native American ritual is going to be the thing that gets rid of them. And so you're going to have to go out and learn a little bit more. And as you learn more, you'll get more information. Just like we talked about, right, bringing it back to the beginning of the show, saying, I just listen more, I hear more. And that's because as I learn something new, it opens up a whole new world of symbols and messaging and information that I can get. And I think that's where teams need to keep moving, is in that constant wanting to learn more about the field and counseling and helping people and what they can do. Learn about historical research and how to do that. Learn about how to do newspaper searches so you can find articles about maybe that location or maybe that family or whatever it is that you need to help build a holistic case for that client.
Now, we are all out of time. I want you to tell me, and I want you to tell all our listeners, how they can get a hold of you for a reading or for an investigation or just have coffee with you, because you're a cool guy, and some of the events that you're going to be participating in.
Sure, absolutely. You can check you can get to me anywhere you need to get to me, right through my website, which is MikeBerta.com. So it's Berta, is B-E-R-T-A. So Mike Berta, paranormal.com. You can get to me on Facebook through my website, my Twitter page, my Google Plus page. Does anybody still use Google Plus? Sorry, Google. And that's so you can catch me there. It's got my phone number on there. You can give that a shout and schedule readings either through my website or just by giving me an email right through the website, which is a perfectly fine way to get a hold of me. I do have actually a few events coming up. I'm fortunate enough to have some great folks I met down in Erie just a little while ago with the Paranormal Supercon. So I'm going to be headed down to Goddess Elite in North Olmsted, Ohio on Labor Day weekend. The Saturday I'm doing their Wine and Spirits event. Which is a reading at John Christ Winery in Avon Lake. Should be an awesome, awesome weekend, not just because we get to go to a cool winery and have probably some pretty great wines, but also get to do some readings with wonderful, powerful people. And then the next day at Goddess Elite Shop proper in North Olmsted, I'm doing a class on paranormal investigation and spirit communication, which is doing some old school spirit communication, glass whirling and the whole nine
Absolutely
yards.
It'll great.
Be a blast. And then then it's just kind of some local stuff here in Buffalo, New York. Bringing in some folks and just hanging out for the Halloween season, and then I'm back to North Olmsted, Ohio in October to an expo, and you can find that information on my website to do readings down there and do a lecture down there for them. So I'm pretty excited to have that connection, and they're great people. And you know, the Paranormal Pinup and Goddess Elite, they're just wonderful folks that I was really fortunate enough to meet in Erie, and that's what I wanted to go there for. And you know, by golly, I got what I set my intentions on.
And you know what, it's fantastic. Mike, thank you for taking the time tonight. This has been great. Everybody loves you. The chat room ground to a halt, which means that they were actually listening, and that's what I love. I want to go and share wonderful people with my wonderful listeners. Mike, thank you again. Have a blessed weekend, and I'm going to be in touch real soon, I promise.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thanks, Tim, very much. I enjoyed it a great deal, and thanks to everybody asking great questions. Those were really, really good questions.
Have a good one now, Mike, and everybody, this has been the Reverend Tim Shaw. You've been listening to us here on the Para-X Radio Network. And what do I always tell you? Do good works. Don't be a self-created victim. And until next time, guys, I will see you where else? In the cheap seats. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the Black Cat Lounge on the Para-X Radio Network.